Yo, what is going on? How are you doing today? It is your boy Bromar here with the very first episode of 2024. I know, I'm a little late to the party. Actually, very late to the party. 3 months late to the party, the New Year's Day party, New Year's Eve party. I don't really pay attention to New Year's Day like that. I know a lot of people use that to reflect on themselves and all this mess, and I'll just do that whenever I reach another milestone, you know, because that's what it's all about, right? We're going at our own pace on this show. Anyway, I want to thank you for still continuing to support the Bromar Show, even though we've been very inconsistent with our episodes and very inactive on social media. I've been mostly active on the art page, but we're gonna get into that in just a couple. But again, I just want to say thank you for still continuing on to tune into the Bromar Show, even though I've been MIA for a minute. I really appreciate it. And if you haven't yet, go ahead and follow the Bromar Show on whatever platform you are listening to, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Play. I'm trying to come up with a topic that I can talk about. We'll get to it later, but I do want to talk about what I've been up to. And I don't feel really as bad now about taking a break, because there's plenty of people in the co-op group that have also taken a break from podcasting. I do like to give a shout out to Mr. Gentleman Lifestyle, because even through, I mean, at least me, not posting on a consistent basis, he's still continuing on to upload an episode weekly and on a consistent basis. And I know you probably hear the thunderstorm right now. Also, shout out to Angelica from A Little Bit of Everything, because this is what actually got me to release an episode. Anyway, I was just listening to A Little Bit of Everything with Angelica, her most recent episode, just talking about keeping up to date what she has been going through in her life right now. And I think this is a perfect opportunity for me to basically give a rundown of what I have been up to. I know last year, or I guess recently, the most recent episode I made was about the Whatever podcast, the host kind of pulling a Harvey Weinstein there, especially with the huge trend of these red pill and alpha male podcasts. I'm noticing now some of them are dwindling down. They're starting to die off, which I think it's a good thing. Some of the stuff they talk about, it's like repetitive, and it's just, you get tired of it, you know? And if I'm not going to go entirely into detail about this whole thing, I'll do it at some other point, but I have to do it as soon as possible too, because it's going to die off soon. If you've experienced life differently when it came to dating, it's really hard to like relate to the stuff and the talking points to talk about, especially when it comes to marriage and body count and femininity and etc. I can't really relate or talk about that because I've stated so many times on the show, I don't have an intention of getting married. So like, I really could care less about body count. And I really shouldn't care about body count. In fact, I'd probably be more turned on if I found out my partner had a higher body count. Means I don't have to do a lot of work. Not just kidding, but I don't want to get too much into it. I should do a completely different episode about that in the future, but also as soon as possible before this thing just dies down. So what I've been up to recently, I might as well just go ahead and give you an update on that. Other than what I have described on the previous podcast episode, I've been working a lot, and surprise, surprise, I mean, still receiving hours. I was expecting for things to dwindle down to and be scheduled less times a week, but it seems that I kept the same consistent schedule, even though things have slowed down. And I forgot to keep into account it's tax season, so people are going to come in and spend huge money in fine dining. So, I mean, can't necessarily complain about that. More hours, more money. Along with that, I've also been focusing on art. I've recently uploaded a new art piece. It looks more like a sticker. Been actually having a very faithful fan and decided I wanted to use my current piece as their profile picture, which I said, go ahead. At this point, it seems like it's going to be a cult because there's more than one person using some of my art as profile pictures. I think that's a compliment. That means people are liking what I'm posting, which is good that I'm receiving that type of love right now, because Couple months back, not so much. And I'm going to explain exactly what's been going on. So your boy here decided to do a little bit of some, let's see how we can make our art page grow, right? Decided to get a Threads account and open up a YouTube channel for the art page. Now, essentially that YouTube channel was to just upload any time lapse of my favorite pieces, not necessarily to be like a growing channel and tutorial all this mess, right? And I did a bit of a meme on the video called Stealing the Art from AI Art. And it was going to be like a part series. And it was the first part that I did. So while opening a YouTube channel, in that same time, I've also got myself into a bit of online drama with the art community. Because when I opened up the Threads account, it was awesome that I was getting such attraction. You know, people were following me more on Threads and they were responding to me, etc., paying more attention there, commenting on people's art pieces and whatnot. It was great. And then we came into the AI art debacle, which people are very polarizing when it comes to that topic. There really isn't an in-between. Even if you're in-between, like you're considered an op, basically. Essentially, you're in op territory if you stand in the middle, if you have a middle ground when it comes to the topic of AI art. And so I had a very unpopular opinion about AI art that I commented on an AI art post, and people got so angry and riled up. Now, I was entertaining it because at that point, people were just acting out of plain emotion. I was over here triggering with their emotions, etc., right? And the funny part is like, I don't understand the psychology behind these people that are anti-AI art. I mean, I get it. Yeah, stealing all this mess, yada, yada, yada. But some of you are a little psychotic. It's almost to the point that it's like, it makes me want to support the other side. Yeah, that's what they got angry about. Well, actually, no. That's what added more fuel to the fire. The original statement is what actually got it started. But in that same time that that beef was going on, I uploaded my very first YouTube video on the art page, and the title was Stealing the Art Back from AI Art, and people still didn't like it. I mean, I had some views, 19 views for a very first video with like a month. Not too bad, not too shabby for a beginner art page, I personally think. And there was one subscriber too, so I mean, not bad, not bad for a first video. The comment section is what got me. I could probably find it here. But essentially, the person just didn't like the fact that I was tracing. But I looked at the person's YouTube channel. They have nothing art related. And if they do, it's other people doing art. So it's like they themselves don't even paint or even digitally paint. They don't even trace. They don't even have a coloring book. Essentially, that's what they called my video, a glorified coloring book, which it's like, I'm pretty sure that still lies within the realms of art. Yeah, the art community, it's indeed, it can be very toxic, yes. And that's why I would suggest if you are going to be in the art space, like you have to be extremely aggressive, like super aggressive to deal with all these haters, with all the people that don't like the stuff you do. And again, my intention wasn't necessarily to be like big and up and coming. Like I just like doing this and I decided to just document some of my favorite pieces, time lapses. I'm not really selling anything. I'm not even commissioning anything. I'm just uploading it because I liked it or something that I did that was good, that I thought was good or a lot better than the previous works I've done. I mean, I've also uploaded some AI art up there too, but now it seems like majority of it's just me drawing and then obviously the fucking YouTube channel tracing, but I really didn't worry too much about it right now. Just because, I mean, these people that are commenting on the YouTube channel, it's only two of them. They're not real artists. I haven't seen any of their artwork. And if I have yet to seen it, I don't know where, I mean, it's uploaded. So it's not just the YouTube channel, but on Threads, like people were on my throat for the unpopular opinion I gave. Oh, you want to know what the opinion was? Oh, yeah. So essentially, I mean, it sounded a little mean, but it doesn't matter. Like, if people also find my art trash, like, why are they even worried about what I'm saying? That's the thing. Like, why do people get concerned about what I have to say if they think my art is trash? So my unpopular opinion was that the only people freaked out about AI art are the people whose art isn't really that great. Well, I was a little bit more mean than that. I said that their art was trash. And people got triggered. Then you had people with a large following, like, okay, look at my art. I have a bunch of followers, in which it was great art. But it's like, okay, you know you have great art. Why are you concerned? Now at that point, you're giving more validity that AI art is better than your art. And so, yeah, a lot of people just came down on my throat for that statement. I guess people thought that their art was really horrible, which, I mean, to my defense, it was. No, I'm just kidding. No, no, no. There were some people that had decent art. It's like, I find yours great. Again, like I said, if you have true confidence over your art pieces, you wouldn't be too worried about what people have to say about your art. I mean, I got a little worried because it's like, okay, this person, I don't see any of their art uploaded, which then tells me like, so you're an artist, but I don't see any art from you, huh? Well. But yeah, it was a huge debacle. And then I was, you know, talking back to people, commenting back on them, triggering them, playing with their emotions. Then I used the famous meme of, well, the looks definitely match the opinion. And people thought it was disingenuous and it was a low hit, which, I mean, you're going to attack the way my art looks. I mean, I might as well just go for your looks too. And, you know, it was kind of, again, entertaining at first, but then I started to realize these people were really crazy. They're psychotic. And again, not all anti-AI art people are crazy. It's just that the ones I encounter on threads, it's like, okay, now y'all are insane. So from there, I decided to make the smart decision to just lay low and not say anything. I still posted on my art page, but I decided to just not entertain them anymore. Otherwise, these people are going to start trying to find personal information about me, and I decided that was a smart move. Now, plenty of time has passed. I have no intention of going back to threads. I will say this, though. There are some baddies on threads that I've met, so there was a huge benefit to that. But other than that, I don't know if I would have any more desire to go back to threads and post any art. I figured that the art community was going to be, you know, kind of a tough community, but I didn't realize that it could get that tough and that mean. Yeah, I know it sounds like I'm talking bad about them. Well, I am, because I had a horrible experience with them, with the anti-AI art people. I had such a horrible experience with them, and sometimes it's really hard to take them seriously just because of the way they behave, which therefore causes me to, again, do stuff like, oh, let's steal the AI art from AI art, you know, the video I uploaded, and people still got mad at that. It's like you can't really please these people. It's like, hey, I'm over here trying to fight back against AI art, the thing y'all guys hate, and even at that, yeah, I still didn't like it. So, yeah, that's why I took a whole break, because me dealing with this whole thing, and then laying low because these people, again, were psychotic. I mean, I think it blew off now. I haven't looked back into threads, and I don't plan on doing so anymore. That's pretty much it in regards to what I've been up to. Yeah, dealing with some drama, essentially. And now I'm going to shift gears into addressing something I should have addressed a long time ago. Do you remember the time I made an episode about Andrew Tate and how he was following the footsteps of Tom Lykus? Well, I would like to come here and take back that statement. And I would also like to apologize for making that statement. The reason why I'm taking back the statement, well, there are several reasons. Because I definitely made a huge mistake into this. I should have looked more in-depth into the stuff he said, into his opinions. I was mostly looking at the, yeah, men must be strong and must lead and basically have a foundation within themselves, etc. type thing, right? I was only looking at that surface level stuff. I wasn't looking into the deeper stuff about how the clips in the war room, which they have been leaked apparently, the messages, the clips. I think he even advocated for bribery and corruption, that everyone should have access to that, in which I disagree wholeheartedly. That is one easy way to put a lot of people's lives in danger. And one thing I can actually say about Tom Lykus is that Tom Lykus is not a criminal. He's not a criminal. In fact, he advocated for anyone breaking the law should be held punishable to the fullest extent. I should even pull up a clip. Now, the clip that I hear most commonly from Tom Likas is when domestic abuse is involved, and always mentions that anyone under any circumstance that lays hands on someone, they're doing the wrong thing and should be held punishable by the law. And then you have Andrew Tate over here advocating for universal access to corruption and bribery. Like, what? That's very pro-criminal. Something a person involved in organized crime would say. I should find compare and contrast clips about these two explaining that. All right, I found the clips. So the first clip I'm going to play is Andrew Tate giving his opinion about corruption. Now, the comment section was kind of weird, and I believe this was on the Fellas podcast is what it's called, but let's go ahead and take a listen to that.
I like living in countries where corruption is accessible for everybody. So in Romania, where I happen to live, it's the most Christian country on earth. There's churches everywhere. People see a higher power beyond simply just money and government. They believe in God. That's another reason I like spending time in Dubai. It doesn't matter if it's Allah or God or whatever you want to call him. I like that. And also, I like Eastern Europe as a whole because corruption is far more accessible. I find it offensive that a police officer in England will stop me for speeding and then refuse to take a bribe and pretend that... No, but I'll tell you why. Because he'll sit there and go, no, this is the law and order, and pretend that the law means something and fuck me over. But if you're a billionaire or if you're Boris Johnson, you can go to Epstein's Island, you can fucking throw parties during COVID, you can do whatever the fuck you want, right? So the whole idea of law and order is a lie. The whole idea of it's bullshit. It's just about if you're high enough, you can throw it all away.
I get what Andrew Tate was saying on that clip. Basically, hey, if you have all the money in the world, if you're a millionaire, a billionaire, you got money, nobody can really tell you anything. I see what he's going with that. However, this next clip I'm going to pull from Tom Likas, he's also a wealthy individual, has been a wealthy individual for quite some time. And funny part, this is when he was talking about his segment of how to treat women like crap. I know. Very ironic, but just listen to where I'm going with this.
Let me be really clear about what I mean so nobody gets confused. In no way should it be implied, inferred, or spoken directly, for that matter, that I'm in favor of violence of any kind. On the contrary, anybody who commits a violent act against anybody should be punished to the fullest extent of the law. That goes for women as well as men. Anybody who commits a violent act should be in jail. That's where they belong. I can't make it any clearer than that.
Again, wanted to apologize for making that assumption, making that comparison, because I only looked at it at a surface level, and I should have done this way back, honestly. I should have addressed this a long time ago. That was it in regards to that. Now, the real topic we are going to talk about. Where is it at? Because this involves dating, and we can probably tie in Gen Z, the red pill, and all kinds of things that have been trending these last couple months, if not 2 years. All right, so the article here from geeksforgeeks.org, and you probably have heard this on other channels, Bumble has laid off about 30% of their staff. So I don't think Bumble is going to have any more success throughout the years. If you don't know what Bumble is, it's a popular woman first dating app. They're going through a period of significant changes. And I mean, they want to still remain competitive in the online dating landscape. And this actually comes after disappointing financial results and heightened competition from industry giants like Match Group, which owns popular platforms like Tinder and Hinge. And these layoffs is impacting about 350 roles due to poor earnings. The layoffs are also part of a reorganization plan to better align with future strategic priorities. And there's also a slowdown in user spending affecting its revenue. I think I know what's happening. I can even talk about how dating apps really operate. I'll even go more into depth about that. Yeah, the company reported a net loss of $32 million in quarter four of 2023, despite the revenue growth it had. And this obviously fell short of Wall Street expectations and led to a decline in stock value. And the dating market is, or at least online dating, It's becoming increasingly saturated with established players like Match Group and emerging competitors vying for user attention, and Bumble's having difficulty to differentiate itself and attract new users, and particularly younger demographics. We're going to go more into detail about that part, because Gen Z has a huge role to play into this. There's also been a slowdown in user spending. The broader economic climate with potential recessionary concerns might be impacting user spending on in-app purchases and subscriptions, which is affecting Bumble's revenue stream. Now, I might as well just go ahead and expose the business model of a lot of these dating apps, okay? So this is what happens. When you first open your account on a dating app, you get flooded with all these matches, right? Giving you the illusion of, like, you know, all these women are interested in you and et cetera, right? And then some time goes by, a couple weeks, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, the matches start slowing down. And then you get some notification of, like, oh yeah, somebody liked your profile pic. If you want to see who, go ahead and upgrade to the premium plan. They basically slow down all the matches so you could upgrade to the premium plan, because obviously they want money, right? So what they do is they push your profile all the way to the back so no one can see it, so no match can see it. And some people are starting to wake up that this is indeed what their business model is. And majority of guys are just staying away from it. Now, another factor I like to add in is majority of the women on those dating apps, they have no intention of going on dates with you or even meeting you. They just want, like, a little quick validation of, like, oh yeah, I still got it. That type of thing, which is fine, you know. Who doesn't? So with that, guys get frustrated and they're like, dude, these apps are useless. Screw this. And that is true. In fact, I would argue and said I've met better people and had a little bit more success when I went out and met people in person. One good example was, man, the Snake Pit at the Indy 500. I met these group of gals. It was an Asian girl and then and three American gals. And they were just really good friends. They were awesome. They were great. Got to talk, party, all this mess. Got to know each other. Amazing time I had with all of them. Not in that sense, but in the sense of, like, hey, you know, I got to know them. There's a lot of things in common with us. Like, I'd be really cool with this friend group, essentially. I'll be cool with them inviting me to their parties, having me meet their other friend groups, etc. Like, these seem down-to-earth cool people I would actually include in my life on a consistent basis. So that's kind of how I thought about it. And now it looks like Bumble is shifting into a little bit of a different plan. They have a revamp coming up, which they plan to implement a more comprehensive overhaul of the app, and which include leveraging the artificial intelligence AI for improved user experiences and enhanced safety features. Now, this topic comes back to AI. I know AI is taking over. Am I right? Sorry, anti-AI art people, but AI art is going to take over eventually. It may not be now, but in the far future. And that's why I said you have to get good as an artist if you want to compete against a machine, because you as an individual still have the human element. So they're also focusing on the younger demographics. They want to introduce new functionalities and features specifically designed to resonate with and attract younger users, a demographic heavily targeted by competitors. Now, about this younger demographic, we can refer to them as Gen Z. This is why I praise Gen Z so much, because they are aware of their current landscape and surrounding and therefore are acting accordingly. That's why you see them acting so unprofessional in the corporate setting. It's why you see them not giving a shit about what others have to say. It's why you see them spend more time chronically online. And in fact, they've put more importance on better things than to, you know, be independent, because they understand that their current market, the current economy for them, not the most favorable. And they are also aware of how exploitive some of these corporations can be. And they're fighting back. I don't think Bumble's going to succeed with this. Gen Z is too aware of big corpo, big tech. They're too aware. They understand what they want. They know what they want. The corporations. And Gen Z, I forgot who was it, but there was this guy on Swell who asked a question about Gen Z possibly seeking something more platonic and more friend-like and are just done with the idea of hookup culture and romance. In fact, it seems like majority of Gen Z isn't even interested in pursuing anything in regards to dating. They're more interested in platonic, just something genuine, and friendship. It really has a lot to do with, well, just their current environment that they're in. And Bumble is trying to essentially go into this route of, well, we have Bumble Business and Bumble Friends. Yeah, BFF, which is for platonic friendships, and Bumble Biz for professional networking, which in reality, I mean, I don't think it's going to work out that way, or really didn't work out that way, as you can see, because they extended beyond dating, offering Bumble BFF for platonic friendships and Bumble Biz for professional networking. But little does Bumble realize that Gen Z, not the most professional. And rightfully so, they have a right not to be professional. I get it. This economy sucks. These companies underpay you. I understand. Along with that, I want to add to this with what the problem with Bumble Biz is. Bumble Biz, it looks like now, is setting up the environment to Harvey Weinstein your partner or your match. You see where I'm going with this? Like, it just sets up the optimal environment for someone to pull off a Harvey Weinstein here. And now with Bumble BFF, one of the main things that I'm going to actually tie in the Manosphere / Red Pill community into this. One of the things that they argue against is that they don't believe in men being friends with women. Now, I think it's difficult because if one party ends up being attracted to the other person, I get it. But what if both parties are not attracted to each other? Like, I think that would be perfectly okay for you to be friends with them. I mean, you're not attracted to your male friends, right? Right? Oh, yeah. Now I'm seeing all kinds of sus stuff online now. I shouldn't have asked that question. But I think that talking point and that mentality has added a lot of fuel to this. And people are like, oh, there's no point of me being on Bumble if I'm here to make friends. I'm over here just trying to get laid. And that is essentially what it comes down to, which is a bit, I want to say toxic, but somewhat problematic, right? Especially if you don't know how to read people. And I think that's one crucial thing in regards to this. You got to learn how to socialize and read people, etc. Because, hey, some gals are just straight up like, they don't care. They want some meat, all right? They want something to stuff themselves with. And maybe you. They're looking for you specifically. But other gals aren't really wired that way. You know, they're looking for a little something more in depth. You know, they want to get to know you. They actually want to like you because they find you attractive, right? But now they want to get to know you more on the inside. Like, basically give themselves a reason to still be with you because, again, they're just that attracted to you sometimes. And if it ends up being correct and something that she wants, then great. She's found you and she's not going to let you go. And if not, she's going to go heartbroken and basically go online and complain about how all men are the same. Because now you contributed to that problem. But nonetheless, I should probably make an episode addressing that, you know, season one episode. But it does kind of cause a little bit of a problematic here thing. Because look, for all, okay, what if the female friends that you make have other female friends that she thinks might be interested in you? Like, you don't, and some people don't really think that far into this. And I think this is what people need to do sometimes, is really think a little bit on a deeper level. And this is kind of like the problem with the majority of the Manosphere / Red Pill space, is that they are always thinking on a surface level. Now, I might as well just stop here because now it's leading into more giving off unpopular opinions about that space. And I think I should save those for a future episode, something a little longer. But I just wanted to come up here, kind of update you on what I've been doing and address a couple things, and then just kind of give a short talk about the Bumble layoffs. And this might lead into what I'm going to go ahead and talk about in the future. So that's going to do it for me. Again, thank you for listening. Like Duke Don once said, you could be anywhere in the world right now and you choose to be here. So I appreciate you. Go ahead and follow the Bromar Show on whatever platform you are listening to, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Play. Make sure you go ahead and share this with your friends. And make sure you go ahead and check out some of the previous episodes, the previous seasons. That way you get an idea of what I was like and how I just got to this point, essentially, right? Basically a way to kind of document my podcasting journey. So anyway, that's going to do it for me. Thank you again. And until the next one.